You're tuned in to RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Reveler Sports.
4 seconds left.
Welcome to, or better yet, welcome back to RBLR Lightning. I'll be your host today, Matt Gannon. After Jake's Dash 3 performance yesterday, we've mutually decided to terminate his contract. Just kidding, Jake couldn't be here with us today, so I'll be steering the ship for us. But alongside me, I always have my good partner in crime, Jose Mataro. How we doing, Joe?
Doing pretty well, thank you.
And we've also got the better half of the Bolt Report, Michael Wax, here with us as well, filling in for Jake. How we doing, Michael?
Good. The last time I was on here, you guys didn't have that intro. That looks pretty nice. So Jake could not have done that.
nothing but the best here on RBLR Lightning, across all the RBLR platforms. If you're here with us today, great. But also be sure to check out some of the other shows we have, the Bucks show, the Rays show. The Bucks are starting to, really put things together. But be sure to check out all our socials. Subscribe to us on the YouTube channel. We've even got a TikTok with Alexa putting out some great TikToks for us covering the Lightning. So just we've got everything covered. Be sure to give us a like, check us out, subscribe. That'd be great. It helps us out a bunch, but let's get to it. Pretty good week for the Bolts, ups and downs here and there, but mainly up. I think we're all pretty, happy coming out of this week. We've got, two and one this week, some pretty good wins, one pretty tough loss, but I guess, we ready to jump right into it?
Let's rock and roll, man. This is stuff I'm definitely looking forward to getting into.
So starting us off, we covered the Dallas game last week, the 4-0 shutout, great bounce back game for Victor Hedman's 1000th game. Vasilevsky stood on his head, but now we've taken on Pittsburgh here at home with a 3-1 final score, what really should have been a shutout, but all in all, still a great game played. Minimal complaints about this, just, kind of carrying over the same energy we had in that Dallas game. Overall, I'm, really happy about the result of that game. But again, it does kind of sting giving up that goal and with 53 seconds left. It's kind of a stinger. But the way I'm looking at it, Vazzy had back-to-back shutouts. He was phenomenal that game other than that, late game blunder.
Oh, I mean, you could also say that considering the fact that the last person to hit the puck was Nick Paul, and actually Vasi himself hitting Nick Paul's stick trying to clear that puck out, then it hit Nick Paul in the leg and went in, that it was two consecutive games without the opposition putting the puck in the net. It's a good way of looking at it, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that was a good game, and, something we were talking about last week was, hopefully this, with the upcoming games would be kind of like a vengeance schedule where they could, come through and get the revenge on teams that had beaten them, especially with that big win against Dallas that we had, covered in last show. And they kind of carried that momentum into the Pittsburgh Penguins, who, the Lightning, the last time we played them, had a really good first period and completely fell off. And this one, the Lightning played well in the first, got the game-opening goal, and then, maintained the lead throughout the rest of the game. It was a really good performance.
Michael, you got any thoughts on this game?
I thought it was a really solid defensive effort, especially for those first, 40 minutes. Pittsburgh's a team that has struggled on the power play, which is really, really weird because of all the high-end talent they have. But they're one of the worst performing teams on the power play this year. So for the Lightning, it was all about shutting them down on 5-on-5, and I thought they did a good job for those first 40 minutes. And last 20, yeah, they relied on Vasilevsky a little bit, but sometimes you're going to have to rely on your goaltender. And, Vasilevsky is the best in the world, so he was up to the task, except for that last minute. But, like you said, we'll just – he's got a shutout. We'll try to ignore that last-minute blunder. I thought that that Cirelli had another great game. We'll get to him later. He had a great week, but he had another great game. Both offensively and defensively, and specifically, I thought Eric Chernak had a monster game. Like, that was his best game of the week for sure.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, with Eric Chernak in mind, something that, again, was a little bit of a bad thing that they were doing in the past is not blocking a lot of shots. And we saw in the Dallas mm-hmm. game, they dramatically increased the number of blocked shots and had the same sort of thing in this one, too, where they had 27 blocked shots, the Lightning did, which is going to make Vasi's job a whole lot easier. And obviously that inept power play that Pittsburgh has didn't do them any favors, but there's also a ton of block shots that happened during the penalty kill for the Lightning, and that's been a really notable difference for those defensive games.
And I'm glad you brought that up, Joe, because I think this is something that you or somebody on the show last week was kind of hammering, that we just weren't getting in shooting lanes or passing lanes pretty much, you know, from the start of the season this year. And, you know, after that, you know, 8-1 drubbing against Dallas, it seems like, you know, they've kind of carried that theme, you know, get in these lanes, block these shots, help your goalie, do, you know, something of the sort to make this game a little bit harder for the opposition. And I think they, you know, they really got in every single lane they could in this game. You know, it kind of fell off a little bit during the week, but they were still, you know, out blocking their opponents. So I'll take that as a win. I was really praying that we weren't going to be the team that Pittsburgh finally gets a power play goal against. Like, what's worse, letting up a power play goal against Pittsburgh or losing to the Sharks? Like,
I was,
you know,
I was definitely hoping that we wouldn't be the one to break that too, especially where they had that 5-on-3 for a bit. And like, oh no, they're finally going to get their footing with this one. But you know, the PK has been really solid with the Lightning.
Yes.
Definitely hasn't been somewhere that they struggled, where they have in other aspects, like you're saying, defensively. So I was debating whether or not to start now or, you know, save it for later, but like Blashill, I think, is just like doing a real disservice, basically running the defensive schemes for the Lightning. And it's like it's a weird zone coverage where instead of being man on, they're told to get to a spot on the ice and then defend from that spot instead of just picking a guy up and defending them. And you can see when they're in really good positions, they're in lanes, they're blocking shots. But at the same rate, how many times have we seen four Lightning defenders like basically in the crease, and then the puck goes out front with somebody wide open that's not covered and shot past all four of those guys? And it looks like an easy tally. This one's working out, you know, so far with these blocked shots, but it's still, you can feel that there's a lot of defensive gaps in the team, and I think it comes from the coaching.
So, sorry, Matt, but I equate it to, if you guys have ever played NHL 24 or whatever, one of your responsibilities as a be a pro is to play defense sometimes, mm-hmm. and you are given a zone quadrant to play defense in. So that is essentially where Jeff Blashill got that idea from.
It's literally a third of the ice that's like the area you're supposed to be in. I know exactly what you're talking about, Michael, and that's kind of how they play. Like, or a third of the zone, I guess, which is still, you know, a giant area to cover, you know, if you're one person. And I'm glad you did bring that up again, Joe. Like, the zone defense, like you're saying, it seems like there's a lack of pressure, especially like paired pressure. Like, they're defense pairs, and it seems like a lot of the time they're playing as single man units, and they're just not really, you know, trading off guys. They're not sticking with the guys that they should have, and they're just playing in the areas they should be, but not the correct area. They're not playing, you know, man to man. They're just playing that, you know, loose zone.
And I mean, it's, and really more than just the defensemen. I'm, you know, you're seeing that from the forwards in the defensive zone, because the defensemen, it seems like they kind of know what they're doing. How many times have you seen the puck go, especially towards the corner? Sergachev goes over to it and then flings it behind his own net. There's a reason for it. It's part of the structure. We got burnt on a few times when the opposing team got to that puck first, put it out front, and then again, that's one of those cases where all of a sudden we've got a bunch of guys in front of the net that aren't picking up anybody, and then the other team scored. But there's, you know, sort of set plays, set responsibilities, and it seems, you know, the forwards are having a heck of a tough time picking up some of those responsibilities and just knowing where everyone is in this newer system. You know, maybe it's something that again, with more games, more time, you know, they got some block shots in this one that, you know, they put it all together. But as of right now, it's making me nervous, But we can get to the next game, you know.
you had mentioned just one final thing on that game. You had mentioned about him, like, flinging the puck around the net and nobody mm-hmm. being there for it most of the time. They do it a lot coming out of the zone as well. Like, they have someone that tries to clear the puck out of the zone, and there's nobody there, so that if there's nobody there for the breakout, so that causes the other team to be able to stick in the zone more often.
Yeah, it's a set pressure relief, and you're putting the puck in, like, the least dangerous area. So, like, the when you're in your own defensive zone, the least dangerous area for the puck is basically going to be in the corners or sending it around behind the net with enough velocity to get back up to the point. Should give your wingers enough time or your forwards enough time to get up there to defend. But, you know, obviously it doesn't always go as planned. Just, you know, passes get missed, and that's kind of a desperation play to get it out, because on an organized breakout, you'll see that almost all NHL teams will have basically two people in the slot defensively, and it's an outside-in breakout where they put the puck towards the front of the net as the other pressuring teams are kind of clogging up the boards. But if you don't have an option, you fling that sucker as hard as you can and try getting it out.
So I guess we'll just go ahead and rip the Band-Aid off. Let's tackle this Nashville game. Bolts, you know, start off scoring. They look pretty good early off. ABB gets the first goal on a pretty beautiful passing play. I think it was Hagel and Sorelli with the assists. It was a great looking play, and then, you know, not much else throughout the rest of the game. I will admit, UC Saros played very, very well that game. The Lightning had their chances. They actually outshot the Predators 33-30. But yeah, UC, it really did a number in on the Lightning this game. I don't think the 5-1 score really reflects, you know, how they played. I think it was a really close game until the end, when they really started icing the game and taking control. But again, 5-1, it doesn't seem like, you know, watching the game doesn't seem like it was as bad as the score reflects, but that's just my opinion. Michael, do you have a take on this game?
Yeah, I thought the Lightning played pretty well. I did not think Jonas Johansson played very well. This was his second game as a backup, and both of them have not been very good. I'm of the opinion, and I know Joe kind of disagrees with me because we've had the conversation. Dude, an 870 save percentage is not going to cut it. Like, since that second shutout he had, he has not been very good, whether it's as the starter or as the backup. So, you know, I understand there are defensive miscues. I understand that, you know, a lot of the opportunities, he's made some big saves in some games, but there are a lot of goals that he's allowed. And I think this Nashville game was a prime example where you have to save those, and you're not giving your team a chance to win, especially on the second half of a back-to-back, where it is always my opinion that your goaltender has to be your best player on the second half of a back-to-back. He's the freshest player you have on the ice, and he just wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some pucks that, you know, he could have played better, but I think most of these goals that went in were defensive lapses. I gave way too good of an opportunity to the shooter. They put him up high. They put him in a spot that's really hard to get. The first one was a power play goal where it was shot from the point, and I think it hit something to go to a guy in the slot. So Johansson's reacting to the initial shot, and then all of a sudden somebody has it directly in the middle of the ice, and he's uncovered. You know, I look at that as, you know, what are you going to do for that one? The Forsberg goal, which was the next power play goal, looked like a double screen. Yeah, he probably should have been able to see around that one and maybe make a better play on that, because I don't think he saw that puck go at all. And then the Ryan McDonough goal was that backhander rebound. That's one he probably should have had. He probably should have had that one, but that still doesn't give the Lightning the lead. You know, they weren't able to solve Soros.
They weren't able to solve Soros, but they also, not to make this a full-fledged argument, this was the first time that both of the special teams units were bad in the same game. Penalty kill allowed two power play goals. The power play didn't score at all. in four opportunities. So you're going to have nights like that. And unfortunately, only one even strength goal.
Yeah, back-to-backs are tough for sure.
Did you start off your hockey career as a goalie? I feel like you're the last person on earth that'll ever blame a goalie or a bachelor or anything. You'll blame anybody but the goalie.
No, I didn't. I did start playing in net at like a beginner level for fun in order to get on the ice with my wife. It's been fun to see it from that angle. But when you want to really dissect, you know, where are we lacking? What needs to be improved on? The save percentage is, you know, sometimes extremely misleading. I mean, look at the save percentage the Bolts had, a couple of weeks ago when they put up 8 on 14 shots. Doesn't really tell you the whole story. So I'm seeing so many times that the goalies are getting burned by really bad coverage. A couple the playoffs last year, maybe, Vasilevsky, I thought he was pretty terrible. He was getting beat short side from basically like the top of the circle on rushes. I'm gonna tear you up and be like, you need to play better. That's an unacceptable goal to go in. It's just, I don't want to lose the emphasis on how bad the defensive structure's been for the Lightning, because I mean, I think that JoJo played magnificent with what he was working with.
Magnificent in this game?
Just for the season, beforehand. And this game, you know, he played like a normal goal. You can't give opportunities like that to teams. The scoring in the NHL, people are so elite with their shooting. You can't let them shoot from the freaking slot. That's ridiculous. And that kept happening.
I'm not going to give this game a pass or anything. You know, it is the second half of a back-to-back. You did have to travel, albeit, you know, from Tampa to Nashville. It's not an insane travel, but still, back-to-backs are never easy, even if they're both at home. So, and the Predators, they're a good team. I wonder if the Lightning may have underestimated them. I think the whole league is kind of underestimating them. They can score and they can stop pucks. Again, the, you know, 5-1 kind of really does show what kind of team they are, and they're fighting for a playoff spot, but I think they're a better team than a lot of teams give them credit for, and I hope the Lightning didn't take them lightly, but that's what it kind of seems like this game. Michael, you were right. This was kind of the first game where special teams did let us down. This one I will chalk up to a bit of an anomaly. Like, again, they've been very consistent throughout, you know, the whole year. 5-on-5 is really where the red flags start to pop up. But, and again, I'm never going to, you know, regardless who he's playing for, I'm never going to really dislike a Ryan McDonagh goal, even though that one was kind of, you know, I'm always cheering for Ryan McDonagh.
What's with the Lightning always having previous players score on them? I mean, it seems like an ongoing theme, right? That it just,
I was so ready for Yanni to score last game. I was so ready for Yanni Gord to score the overtime winner last game.
I think he scored against us the last time we played Seattle in Tampa earlier this year, I want to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Shoot. Well, I guess, you know, if we're already talking about it, let's talk about this Kraken game. This game was sending me, you know, for a loop or so. This game was up and down. It, again, started off really hot. If you just watched the first period, you would have expected the score to be 8-0, and the wheels, not that they fell off in the second and into the third, but you could see that battle level kind of went down. Maybe not the battle level went down, but Seattle really found their game, and they've been struggling. They've been struggling since, you know, day one of the season, but they really put together a strong performance, got away with a win, but the Lightning come back in overtime. This was a fun game to watch as a fan, despite me having to work the next day and stay up till 1 a.m. to watch this game. That's the kind of pain we all put ourselves through to enjoy this team. But how did you guys feel about this game, Joe?
I was going to say, I was so hyped at the ending. It took me like almost an additional hour to go to sleep. Something that happened kind of away from the game too, which I know you guys all saw. Cooch skating directly up to the glass to mm-hmm. give the business to one specific fan, which, you know, I saw that right off the bat. Oh man, something, you know, what would have set him off to be that direct? And you see, you know, all three of them, you know, with Sergachev and Hagel, like, basically giving the business to this one fan.
Can I put in my two cents?
Okay.
I think the reason Kucherov did this. You know, we all know, you know, how these Russians are. You know, they really care about how they look, their fashion, their style. And I think he just really didn't like what this dude was wearing. And so he went up and gave him the business. So if I was that dude, I would immediately go get some lightning-inspired gear, go to shop.rblrsports.com, get 10% off of everything using the code BOLTS. And even better, for this holiday season, we partnered up with The Bolt Report, and we're doing an ugly shirt themed theme shirts this week. So all the proceeds will go to Toys for Tots. Again, you can find that on shop.rblrsports.com. Again, we all know that that one fan and maybe his girlfriend that was with him, they need some new gear. Hop on over to shop.rblrsports.com. The link is in the description.
That was beautiful, Jake-esque.
ugly shirt, ugly transition. Oh boy.
But okay, hopping back into it again, roller coaster of a game. Joe, you said you think you have a reason, or your buddy told you why he gave that fan the stare down, or is that confidential information?
No. I mean, there's additional angles if you watch the game that you can see. This particular fan was constantly flicking off the players, and I guess was yelling at them so much that you could hear him on the bench, and he was harassing them all game long. To the point that, like, the players took note of it. And, you know, he probably had a couple of beers too many and got a little boisterous. And Cooch decided to give it back to him, which is, you know, he's usually so cool, calm, and collected. But when he goes off, you know, it's definitely noticeable. So it was one of those things that I found was – there we are, playing musical chairs. One of the things I thought was pretty funny throughout the game, or at the end of the game there, because it's definitely atypical to see.
Michael, you got anything on this game?
It was another pretty good performance that we've seen more recently, which I'm not going to lie, it looked a little like that Pittsburgh game from a few weeks ago. And if we had another one of those, I might have lost my mind, because you play so well in the first and then everything falls apart in the second. You give up that early power play goal in the third. And I'm like, man, I stayed up for this. Like, what's going on? But you know who finally rewarded us for this? Nick Paul getting, I believe it was his like second even strength goal of the year. He finally gets on the board at even strength, and then the overtime is overtime. And if you haven't seen that Brendan Hagel pass, that was exceptional. Put it between the I don't remember who exactly was defending, but he put it between his legs while the guy had a knee down to get it over to Kucherov. It was one of the slickest passes you'll ever. It's one of the slickest passes you'll ever see.
I mean, even just the pass, but just the effort from Hagel, that whole rush. I don't know how long he was on the ice, but, man, he burnt every single person he could have. And Kucherov, you know, on the other wing there, just, you know, what an effort. And, again, I don't know if we've put enough emphasis on we have two overtime wins this season now, guys. I think that's a lot to celebrate. but, again, just a Herculean effort from Hagel there, and what a great, you know, great opportunity for Cooch to finish. Man, are those guys both just on fire or what? But
yeah, so talking about the overtime specifically, I mean, it was definitely scary that Cirelli took the penalty with, you know, just a few seconds left in the third while it was tied. And it was an unfortunate penalty because it wasn't an intentional trip. He tripped one of their players. But just the timing was horrible. Plus, the puck should probably never have been in the RN because there's too many men on the ice for Seattle there. Sometimes it gets missed, you know. It's a judgment call. It's not an automatic call.
Dude, there were like eight guys on the ice.
Well, the number doesn't matter. It's their positioning and relative to the play. If you got eight three guys that are literally standing at the bench while the other guys are jumping into the play, they're not going to call. There's like a 6-foot grace period or grace area to the ice. But I agree, it should have been called. It's just not automatic, like sending a puck out of play. And so that really sucked. But the penalty kill came up big during that 4-on-3, which was a huge thing. And then, you know, we've been so concerned. I think it's I haven't, honestly, but for the overtime, everyone's been so concerned that the Lightning are horrible in overtime, which, man, I've been saying it's not the Bolts. It's the fact that whoever wins that faceoff draw, they're basically winning the game. And because Seattle couldn't score, we got our opportunity. If the Lightning get the puck in overtime, their chances of winning go up dramatically, so dramatically. And you see that. I think that in all of the overtimes, how many have there been so far this season? We have like five overtime losses.
Yeah.
Right? So we've won, what, two or three?
Yeah, so there's been seven.
Seven?
Okay,
seven. We've probably only touched the puck in three of those. And we've won two of them. Because remember, there was that one that was a couple of weeks ago where
the Jets game.
And it went back and forth quite a few times. A bunch of shots. I was saying that the Lightning lost, but that was a more traditional overtime. What you like to see with the puck changing hands and possession changing quite often. But the rest of them, Lightning didn't get an opportunity, and the other teams didn't fire a shot until it was automatic. Kept leaving the zone. So if the Lightning get the puck, they're fine in OT. The trouble is getting the puck. And you saw once they had the opportunities, they've scored two out of the three times.
And it's nice to see that they're actually making adjustments. Again, Cooper's been vocal about that, you know, after the, you know, third overtime loss to start the year. They're sending out Anthony Cirelli or Luke Glendening, or just two really good defensive forwards, really good centers in the dot. I think it was after they killed the penalty, they sent one of those two guys out there. They win it back, and immediately, as soon as they get possession, the defenseman has the puck. Both the forwards go right to the bench, and Kucherov and Hagel or Kucherov and Point come on. That they're making these adjustments. So at least we know that they're cognizant of it, and it, you know, it's working. So I know it wasn't immediate. You know, they get off the ice, Kuch comes on, and they score. There's a lot more to it, but. It's something that they're fixing.
Speaking of Cooch, though, he worked really hard to skate hard enough to get that goal. But obviously, that was all Hagel winding it up and then slotting it directly, you know, through the feet of the defender. And then, you know, Cooch had the whole net to work with. Were those the two easiest goals that Cooch has scored all season? First goal, he just went to the back door, and do you remember last season when Corey Perry would just stand there and Cooch would basically just fire it off his stick right in? Corey Perry wouldn't even move. That's kind of what Cooch had on that goal. He just stood back door and it came right back over to him. See, I don't have the stat on who did it. See, I guess that was Point. That's right, because he entered the zone, dropped it to Hagel. Hagel got it over to Point, and Point sent it cross crease right over to him. He's just standing there, wasn't even moving. And then, yeah, he had to skate hard to get into the play, but he's fed such a perfect pass that getting that one off with the goaltender sliding is easy for him. Those were, you know, he did pretty well to score there without having to work as hard.
It must be nice for Kucherov not to have to do all the work all the time.
I'd say Hagel definitely had to work hard for that one. But the team overall had to work even harder because we didn't see Steven Stamkos in it. And then also for the third period, Hedman didn't play.
Oh, did he not? I think he came back for parts of the third, right? Or
no, he didn't take a single shift in the third.
Was he on the bench at all, or was he just in the locker? Okay, dang.
Yeah.
Did anybody see what happened to him? I heard it on the broadcast. I didn't see what happened.
The rumors are that so Stamkos was out because he was sick, and the rumors are that for Hedman, he might be ill as well. He missed practice today, from what I was hearing. So there's a bug going around. It does tend to happen when you've got an extended road trip. I'm sure, you know, as tough as it is for us to stay up late at night to watch these games, it's even harder to travel across the country and get your schedule messed up by, you know, a solid 3 hours in order to play them.
Usually I'd attribute that to the Nashville flu, the Broadway flu, but they had a couple of days between games, so I guess it must be something legit.
I mean, we're also in December, which is your actual flu season. So, you know, not to speculate, but it could very well be what the guys have.
Do you guys have anything else on this Seattle game before we start getting to our stars?
Yeah, one more quick thing. You know, we talked about McDonough scoring last game. You know, former Bolts player scoring. The last time I played Seattle, Yanni scored against our boys. Well, Belly Belmar actually put a puck in the net and got a tally, but it was called back. Just another Lightning player that former Lightning player that scored against them.
It helps our agenda, so we'll count it.
You know who else scored again was Lightning killer Oliver Bjorkstrand, just needs to stop scoring goals against my team.
All right, guys. I think we've aired all our grievances out. So let's look at the brighter side of things. We're going to tackle our three stars. And for the third star of the week is none other than the backbone of this team, Andrei Vasilevskiy. He had a good week, and I think we're cheating a little bit because we are going to include that Dallas game. I guess we're cheating twice because I'm still counting that Pittsburgh game as a shutout. So he had back-to-back shutouts. The Seattle game was a little shaky, but overall, you know, he's starting to revert back to form, be the guy that we all know and love. Joe, what was your take on Vazzy this week?
Yeah, getting what, you know, realistically is like back-to-back shutout performances is great. Great seeing him, you know, stick with it through all the struggles that he's had to push through, especially, you know, getting 8 put up on him, you know, the week before, then being mentally strong enough to say, okay, I'm gonna hone in on my craft and show the world why I'm the best goaltender there is. He played outstanding, and he, you know, gave the Bolts, I guess we're gonna say, 2 wins. You know, if we want to throw in that Dallas one as well, 3 wins in the course of a week.
Michael,
yeah, 3-0 with a .949 save percentage. Held though, really, really happy with the way that he played. And, you know, it, especially with those games beforehand, Dallas and Pittsburgh, it was kind of evident that, like, I know he came back against the Hurricanes and he won that game because we put up 8 goals, but he took some time to adjust. And I think a lot of people lost sight of that because he did not have a conditioning stint with the crunch. He just came back into, you know, off of the surgery table and into the lineup. So it took him a while to adjust. And, you know, this week he looked like prime Vasilevskiy, which is all you can really ask for.
Continuing our segment into our second star of the week, a guy who absolutely deserved it, a guy who I think we've all been, you know, kind of hoping starts to pick it up a little bit. Boy, did he ever pick it up. It's Anthony Cirelli, Big Tony. He had a tremendous week. I was kind of arguing him for the first star, but it is a bit unarguable. But man, he was clutch. He was great. I think he had 4 goals this week, a couple of assists, a couple of beautiful assists as well. So Tony Cirelli, a guy that, you know, had a little bit of a slow start, but again, you know, even without putting up the numbers, he's a guy that, you know, is everywhere on the ice, everywhere he should be, making key plays, taking great faceoffs, having great, you know, defensive awareness, breaking up plays. Again, he's just, you know, a utility knife, and every man, he does it all. But man, now that he's starting to find the scoring, and again, you know, at a rate I don't know if we've ever really seen. He's a guy that goes into greasy areas. He's in front of the net. He's a tough guy. Again, a great week, 4 goals, and, you know, it's insane for Tony Cirelli. I know he's kind of wondering how he did it. He had a couple great backhands as well. Just a guy that did everything and anything he could this week. How are you guys feeling about him?
Yeah, the one of his best things that he does is just his defensive play. And in that Seattle game, he was a +2, which definitely says a lot considering that was such a back-and-forth game. He was doing well in his shutdown role, but then also contributing offensively, something he's been struggling with a little bit for the first part of the season. That's a big deal when you see somebody come out of what's a scoring rut and then start to play dominantly. It's really shown, and those you know, 4 points. Let's see, you know, if we go back to the Dallas game, you know, that almost should be looped in here with them. He had 2 goals in that one. So in the course of a week, he ended up scoring 4 goals. That's that doubles what actually he had leading up to this week.
Yeah, I mean, for Cirelli, the conversation has always been, listen, we know you're great defensively. If you want to get nominated for the Selke, you got to put up a little bit more. And I think a lot of people were really down on the beginning of his season. But this week was great again. I thought, you know, you mentioned defensively. I thought his penalty kill this week with Hagel in particular, that duo is awesome. Like the shades of Goodrow and Coleman and, you know, whatever partner Gord ever had, because that was ever changing. You know, the Lightning's penalty kill, and you mentioned it earlier in the show, has always been good. These guys have now taken the reins to be that first forward duo on the penalty kill, and they've done a great job, and especially this week. So I guess honorary start to Hagel. I know I'm, you know, not technically on RBLR, but I'm making the executive decision. But
we'll allow it.
Cirelli, I guess, for more of the offensive show this week, absolutely deserving of a star.
Yeah, it's still kind of amazing to me how if you have Hagel and Cirelli out there on a penalty kill, like sometimes goals go in, but I'm amazed how some, like, they just never allow a goal. Like, they're some of the best penalty killing duos in the league. I'd put them at, you know, at top three, no doubt. They're both honey badgers there.
It's actually kind of surprising that there's not been more shorthanded goals scored with them out there, because they actually generate a ton of opportunities to do that. And it just hasn't really quite converted for them, but they're so fast in their transition game.
And I think they had a couple of them. What, shorties?
I'll try pulling it up.
Yeah, I think it's two or three.
On the season, I don't think we have any, but
I know last year they had a really hard time getting a shorthanded goal for a while, and then the dam broke when Hagel scored against the Predators, and things started to get a little bit easier. But this year, I don't know. But it's one of those things that, like, you know, I mentioned Goodrow and Coleman because that is probably my favorite. Like, if you could have a favorite penalty killing duo, like, people remember Goodrow and Coleman specifically for their penalty killing and being on that line with Gord. They were unbelievable. And the thing that I remember the most about them, besides the playoffs, was, you know, a lot of people weren't very happy when they got Goodrow and Coleman because of the price they paid. And there was one game against the Flames before the shutdown where they themselves generated, I think it was 6 chances on net on the penalty kill. It was absolutely insane. I was like, all right, like, this could be a decent kit. And it did end up being a decent kit.
I love how Tony Cirelli has transformed into us talking about two guys who haven't played on this team in 2.5 years now. But that's just how impactful Goodrow and Coleman were. And Yanni Gord, will lump him in there too.
I'm not the best at pulling up stats, but using StatMuse, it shows that they have 0 goals for while being shorthanded this season.
This season I don't think we have any throughout the team, but I think Michael's just looking for, you know, their tenure with the team. But in the essence of saving this show, we're burying the lead. I guess it's not really the lead, but for our first star of the week, it's no surprise, it's no secret whatsoever, it's the best player in the world, it's Nikita Kucherov. Again, just I have no more words. He's the best player. He's playing on another level. He's kind of outpacing his 128-point season back in 2019. He's doing it all. Again, what more can we say about him? Do you guys have anything new we can say about Nikita Kucherov that hasn't been already said?
His shoulders have to be so tired because he's been carrying this team for the majority of the season. And I mean, maybe it's a good workout for him because he shows no signs of slowing down. Just pulling up the stats for on NHL.com right now, he is first in goals with 19 goals on the season. Second place has 18. He's first in
I think what Joe is trying to say is he's the best at every single thing offensively in this league. It's no surprise. Oh, are we back?
There he is.
47 points and second has 40 points. That was the last thing I was going to say.
I think I tried to finish it off for you. I said Joe was just trying to say he's the best at everything offensively in the world. So I'm glad you were able to get that across, Joe.
Kucha's big thing this year that I've noticed is that when you look at, like, previous years, he's a decently fast player, but he played very slowly Like he slowed the game down to what he wanted to do, and he's still doing that for a lot of the opportunities that he has. But he's actually picked up his speed on a couple of occasions. I don't know if it's because the Lightning have a necessity to get more goals off the rush, but on that Hagel or on that Hagel pass in overtime, that dude was booking it like to the net and had an easy tap in. And I think it was Joe, you said it, like those were the two easiest goals he's going to have this season, simply because like he was in the right place at the right time. And, you know, I think one of the reasons that we talked about Cirelli versus Kucherov is for battle for first star is, you know, Kucherov made it look easy and had a couple of tab ins, and Hagel kind of had to earn his way to getting a goal per game pace.
Yeah, Cirelli's always kind of fast and dangerous, and Cooch is just cool, calm, collected. Like he's a new Pavel Datsyuk, maybe not with the defensive side, but just how he's kind of a magic man, how he just appears out of thin air and can disappear right again. Just getting into those soft areas and just, again, disappearing. That's one of the most crucial aspects of being a goal scorer is just having the defenders forget that you exist so you're that's open.
That's exactly what he did in the Pittsburgh game when he scored his goal on that one. He disappeared from the side of the net, went out front. How do you not cover Kucherov in the slot? He's out front, then did like a spin to snipe it over the shoulder of the goalie. And that's definitely not somebody that you want to lose track of on the ice. And just as another stat, if you include the Dallas game, he actually had three game-winning goals this week to just show how clutch he is.
And Kucherov, we won three games.
For Hart. Kucherov for Hart, it's undebatable if he can continue this pace towards the end of the year. And the thing that solidified it for me, again, with his great play, but I know I was talking about going to that Carolina game about a month ago or whatever where we got shut out 4-0. That was a game Kucherov missed with an illness, and that team was as anemic as I've ever seen them. They just could not get anything going. It was the most boring hockey game of my life, and that's the hill that I will die on is this team is Kucherov and a bunch of guys, and a good goalie, but obviously I'm embellishing a little bit, but just him not being in that game had a completely different complexion than when he is in the lineup. Kucherov for Hart, they're a different team with him. But again, enough of the glazing, let's look ahead. Unfortunately, we still have we're on the West Coast Canada trip. We've got some tough games coming up against some pretty good teams at some pretty terrible times. We've got Edmonton. I don't have the dates here, but Edmonton, when this comes out, it'll be on Tuesday at 10 p.m.
No, that's Vancouver at 10 p.m.
Oh, Vancouver,
on Tuesday. Then on Thursday at 9 p.m. will be the Edmonton game. And finally, again at 10 p.m., Calgary Flames on Saturday.
Oh, God. I love this team a little too much. I'll be there for all of it, but at least we get a 9 p.m. game in there. You were typing in the doc earlier. It said 4 p.m. I was like, oh, sweet. We're getting lucky with one, but I guess I typed that in there? Lucky. Well, you did earlier, but then it got corrected. So when I pulled up the doc sheet here, I was like, oh, no. So
it's funny. I just, I said last show I had gone to Vegas, and it took me a few days to start getting my sleep schedule back to normal after being 3 hours behind. Now the Lightning go and do this road trip, and I feel like I'm, getting all messed up with my sleeping hours again.
So the West Coast Canada trips are never easy, especially for, any team, not just the Lightning. Carolina just ran through there and went 0-4. Vancouver's playing good, but they're kind of regressing to the means. Edmonton, they're kind of starting to play good, and Calgary's somewhere in the middle. They're kind of like a Tampa team right now, just, pretty good, pretty bad, somewhere in the middle. But I'm hoping for a really good road trip against these guys. I'm not expecting a 3-0 sweep by the time we rendezvous back here on Monday night, but I'm hoping we can at least come away with 4 points or something like that. Again, these West Coast trips are super hard. If we can, this will be kind of a measuring stick for the season. If we can, walk out of these arenas against good teams with a couple of points, that'd be ideal for me to see. What are you guys, hoping for, predicting for in this week upcoming?
Well, I'll say that the Vancouver game, they actually have the highest goal differential in the league right now, is a plus 32. I mean, they got a bunch of top liners that are at the head of the scoring stats, but they're defensively, they can definitely be suspect. I would love to see the Lightning continue their defensive ways against this team. We definitely have the offensive ability to outscore them, but let's see if we can't shut them down as well. So the Vancouver matchup is the one that I'm looking forward to most.
Michael, any thoughts?
It's always fun to watch Connor McDavid. Like, I against the Lightning, they actually did a really good job of shutting him down in the last game. The problem was that everyone in the secondary scoring was scoring in that game. And I'm glad the Lightning did win that game, but you have to have a full defensive effort against the entire team. So, you know, if McDavid burns you once or twice, you tip your cap, you say, all right, that's Connor McDavid. Leon Draisaitl does, you go, okay, that's Leon Draisaitl. For the Lightning, it's about shutting down the rest of the team, making those two guys beat you. They have had more success recently with Chris Knobloch's system. And so it is all about, you know, how can the Lightning sort of counteract it, because they've never seen it before. They saw Jay Woodcroft's system. So it's going to be an interesting game. I like you said, Matt, 4 points in those three games or better.
Or better. I'll take or better. You fellas got anything else, you know, covering this week, or are we about ready to get out of here?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to say that, you know, 4 points, I think that you know, obviously that's good, but I think they actually really need to take this opportunity and do great, because you have the Oilers, who have 0.375 winning percentage, right? They've won 7 games of the 20 that they've played, so they should be pretty beatable. Calgary Flames are still a below 500 team. They definitely should be beatable. And the Canucks, they're playing some of the best hockey that they've played in years, but I still think that that's the challenge that the Lightning need to rise to. The reason I'm saying these are really important games is because if you look at the standings right now, the Lightning are in the number one wild card spot, but the Maple Leafs and the Caps, for that matter, the Islanders are all right on their heels with 3 or 4 games in hand. So the Lightning really need to start stepping up here. And while they're well above the 500 mark, they need to start banking these points while they have the golden opportunities that they do.
Not to correct you, but the Oilers have won 7 in a row. I don't know where you got you said they won 3 games this season, or 7 games this season.
The Oilers?
7 in a row.
They're turning things around.
Okay, I mean, the NHL.com is wrong then. That shows their current win streak is 2.
Yeah, they're 12-12-1. They were 5-12-1, so.
Dang.
Where?
Joe, it's NHL.com. Yeah.
Yeah, the Oilers.
All right, I'll take your word for it. I mean, it is NHL.com. The new app has been like garbage, so.
I'm on the app, so maybe I'm wrong as well.
Y'all are wrong.
All right, hold on. I think before we close this out, we need to find this out. I'm going to check out ESPN.
Ooh, just God. I'm going to Google.
All right. Because that's a big difference.
I'm pretty sure Michael's right. I'm not going to trust the NHL
that
app or NHL.com.
That 12, is crazy. 12-1. NHL.com is that wrong. Mm-hmm. I should show you guys a 7-game winning streak. I didn't even really realize, because I don't pay too close attention to the West Coast, but literally on NHL.com, it is showing them as, you know, whatever I had just said, with only having a 2-game win streak and the rest were all losses.
Put it in the group chat.
somehow the NHL app and NHL.com is inferior to ESPN stats, and that's something.
And ESPN, well, is getting better at hockey. They hated hockey. It's like getting back together with an old girlfriend. There's definitely still some issues there.
Somehow the NHL.com and NHL app are different.
Oh my god.
They're run by the same people.
Okay. I think we'll cap it off there. it was a great episode, fellas. I'm sorry, but Jake will be back next week. Don't you worry. But be sure to check out all our socials. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Buy some merch. Buy an ugly t-shirt. All proceeds go to charity. I think that's it for this week. Love you guys. Peace out.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.